And welcome to a new edition of Mercenary Musings Radio, a bi-weekly audio program featuring mining analyst and commodities expert, the mercenary geologist, Mickey Fulp. We are your most trusted source for in-depth analysis and commentary on commodities, mining, and the junior resource sector. And joining us now from Albuquerque, New Mexico, is the mercenary geologist himself, Mickey Fulp. Mickey, welcome to 2014.
Thanks a lot, Rob. It's good for the commodities business that 2013 is behind us now, I think.
Yeah, no kidding. We're bidding good riddance to 2013. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, because it was a pretty rotten year, wasn't it, for much of the commodity space. We're going to take a look back at that 12-month period, pretty rough ride, to try to get a handle, I think, Mickey, on just where we're going this year. You want to begin with precious metals. Some ugly numbers coming out of that area of the metals market last year, certainly.
Yeah, gold was down 28% over the year. You know, it was probably very easily predicted in hindsight that from its high in September of 2011 near 1900, we kept making lower lows and lower highs. And that would tell you that a correction was pending. And we actually had three corrections in the year. In mid-April, took it from 1,600 to about 1,400. Late June, another correction down to 1,300, and then we've had this latest correction down into the 1,200 level. The low for the year 1,192 was actually on June 28th, but we tested that over a four-day period in mid-December. And looking forward, I would think that we're going to test this 1,200 level of gold again and again. We kind of see a downstepping. So I'm not sure that that gold's going to perform very well in 2014 either.
Okay, and as rough a ride as it was for bullion, it was even worse for silver. I think silver was down about 37%, just like gold, the worst one-year performance since 1981. I've seen some or heard some talk out there, Mickey, and maybe this is just wishful thinking on the part of some people, that perhaps silver might be setting itself up for a short squeeze, a short covering rally for silver. How do you see that metal performing?
Well, I tend to look at silver as an industrial metal more than a precious metal. So from that point of view, with the world's economy kind of on the rebound, I would say that was somewhat bullish for silver. But on the other hand, it is a very speculative and manipulated market. So certainly shorts could get squeezed. It's a metal that's always going to be more volatile than gold, and I would just soon stay out of that venue.
And when we look at the entire list of precious metals, Mickey, I think only one notable name was a winner last year, and that was palladium, ending the year at about $711 an ounce. Not a lot of upward movement, but it was a real roller coaster ride for palladium too, wasn't it?
Well, it was somewhat, but it was up 2% over the year, and of all the precious metals, it is more of an industrial metal than even silver. And it's used in catalytic converters. Now, also, platinum is used in catalytic converters. Mm-hmm. It was down 12% over the year. But what happened with platinum is there was an anomaly going on for a couple of years where the platinum to gold ratio was less than one, and that corrected this year. It's been greater than one. Platinum price closed at $1,357. The average cost of South African platinum production, which is somewhere near 80% of world production, is $1,600 an ounce. So from that regard, I would be bullish on platinum. Palladium is driven by U.S. and Chinese auto demand and environmental controls coming into China especially. So I would expect palladium to perform well in 2014 also.
Okay, well, let's turn our attention now to Dr. Copper, down just over 7% in 2013. Currently, though, sitting, I think, Mickey, at about a seven-month high. The second half of the year was certainly not too bad for copper. I think it gained about 12%. We're looking at some drawdowns on stockpiles. What's your feeling about the copper market right now as we are seeing signs of economic recovery?
Well, I think copper became somewhat oversold for a while, and it had a lot to do with warehouse inventories going up quite boisterously. If you look at total world inventories, we had 595,000 tons at the first of the year. That went as high as 942,000 tons by mid-June. But you have to put that into perspective, Rob. A lot of this has to do with queues in warehouses, getting copper on warrant that is canceled, getting those supplies out the door. And then there was a big shuffling in the first half of the year from LME inventories into Shanghai inventories. So that, once again, is somewhat of a manipulated market in terms of inventories. You have an arbitrage that's always going on between LME prices and Shanghai prices. By the end of the year, we were down to 642,000 tons in documented world inventories. Now, this is somewhat opaque, but I'm bullish, as you well know, on, especially in the mid to long term on copper. Demand in the West has been essentially flat over the last few years, about 0.5% annual growth. But it's really driven by China and India, so-called Chindia demand. We have dwindling scrap supplies, falling inventories now, and somewhat of always, for the last 4 or 5 years, a delicate supply-demand balance. So all in all, I would be bullish on copper for 2014. But I think it's going to be, again, range-bound. It's difficult to predict that price, but we're sitting at about $3.30 right now, and that's certainly what I would consider in the middle of the range.
Okay, another metal that's really driven by Chinese demand is iron ore. The first 9 months of this year saw China's iron ore imports gain about 9%. I don't know how you feel about this metal going forward, Mickey, but it's is it kind of hard to really be bullish on iron ore when you have the CEO of Rio Tinto saying that the price will likely decline this year as global supplies rise?
Well, I'm not sure that Rio Tinto, the CEO of Rio Tinto, is such a maven and a foreseer of the iron ore price. So I'll tell you the truth. Rio Tinto does not control the world's iron ore market. The world's iron ore market is very much dependent on Chinese demand. It's also very sensitive to supply disruptions, in particular places like Australia. There was just a cyclone in Australia that's flooded the port, so Pilbara iron ore is sitting and can't get out the out of the port. In terms of prices, we saw highs in the first part of the year in January and February, about $155 a ton was the yearly high. Yearly low came in June at $115. We finished the year at $133 a ton. This is not a world market. It's not traded. It's not, there are no futures. It's all about offtake contracts and spot prices. So once again, a somewhat opaque market driven by China, but you know, China is doing well. The idea that that China could sustain 10% annualized year-over-year growth in GDP was a fallacy. They've now put in economic controls and kind of bumped that down to about 7 to 7.5% a year. But that's still good good growth and good demand, and you know, it's the world iron ore industry is controlled by essentially a large cartel of miners. We've got some minor iron ore that comes in, for instance, Labrador Trough. But for the most part, it's demand's controlled by China. Supply demand disruption, supply disruptions can affect the price. But all in all, I would say I'm moderately bullish for iron ore in 2014.
Okay, moderately bullish for iron ore for this year. Let's turn our attention to crude oil. At the time of this recording, Mickey, I think we're sitting West Texas Intermediate at about $94 a barrel, and we're coming off a week that saw WTI get off to a very rough start for 2014, down, I think, more than 6%, its biggest weekly drop in about 9 months. We've got the U.S. dollar, of course, doesn't help the price of oil, But what are your feelings on the price of oil as we kick off a new year and as we review 2013?
Well, the yearly low was in April at $86.65 for WTI. The yearly high was on September 6th at $1.10 and change. So we once again had oil very much dependent on geopolitical events and risk. Those highs in that two-month period was the saber rattling that went on with the U.S. and Syria and the U.N. From August to October. That went away. We now have the U.N. in there getting the chemical weapons out of Syria. So all in all, the demand for oil remains strong. We had Brent essentially flat year over year, $110 and change. But it did have perturbations too, with a low about $97, a high over $1.17. The deal with oil is demand remains strong, supplies are increasing. It's been very much a U.S. shale oil development story, with North Dakota now the largest oil producer in the United States, overtook Texas in the last couple of years. But these new shale oil developments in North Dakota and Texas, and the newest one in Oklahoma, the Marcellus in the Northeast U.S., are really the story. And I just wish we could find a way to easily play that Brent to WTI arbitrage.
All right, Mickey, from oil, let's move on to natural gas. What's your feeling about nat gas as we kick off 2014?
Well, let's review what happened in 2013 first. We had a low of at the beginning of the year of $3.43 a million BTU for Henry Hub gas. That one is high as $4.24 in December. I think that is really due to, and you will know this living where you live, the cold winter that you've had in the northeast part of North America this year. Year over year, up 24%. Henry Hub gas is very constrained because of lack of infrastructure in North America. Let's look at gas prices coming out of Russia to Western Europe, or gas prices in Eastern Asia, are $15 to $17 a million BTU. Then we can go back and do the math. If you take the ratio of energy provided by a barrel oil compared to a million cubic feet of gas, these are the standard ways of measuring units of oil and gas, the average energy input would tell you that the price of oil should be about 5.5 to 6 times the price of gas. So if you do the ratio WTI to Henry Hub, you get an oil and gas ratio about 24. Then let's look at the rest of the world. If you do a Brent crude price, which would be the standard for Western Europe, at $110 a barrel right now, and a Russian price delivered natural gas to Western Europe or Eastern Asia of $15 to $17 a million BTU, that's 6.5 to 7. So they are in line with energy production, but North America once again lags behind, and that's due solely, as we mentioned before, the lack of infrastructure in North America. Going forward, I would expect a higher gas price in the U.S. in 2014.
Okay, well, let's wrap it up with uranium. I've seen a report from an analyst at Cantor Fitzgerald. He is saying that uranium in 2014 is being set up for a violent move higher. Do you share that bullish view for uranium?
Well, I think my views on uranium were summarized about 2 weeks ago when I published a musing called Supply-Demand Fundamentals of Uranium. That's on my website, and I would invite all listeners to go take a look at it. It's about 1,000 words summarizing my views of what's happened in the uranium business and what's going to happen going forward. In review, the price took a big hit over the year, minus 20% down year over year on spot from $43 and change to $34.50. The term price actually dropped from $56 to $50, down 12%. There's no one in the world that can produce uranium and make a profit at $34.50. Even the ISR producers are going to break even at that price. So at some point, and that point is not now in my opinion, the price will rise. The problem is because of the shutdown of 50 Japanese reactors, the spot price, there is no short-term demand right now. The utilities have gone in and made discretionary buys over the last couple of years, and so their stockpiles are high, and there is no short-term demand. Until that short-term demand comes back, we're not going to have a rise in uranium prices. We're looking now with spot price, we look at that as a midterm market. And it really has to do all with Japan. In December of 2010, pre-Fukushima, there were 55 nuclear reactors producing electricity in Japan. They used about 8,000 tons of uranium a year. In 2013, there are now zero reactors producing electricity in Japan. There are 50 operable, but none of them have permits to offer to operate. The total demand in 2013 was 360, more or less 360 tons of uranium. So that is a significant drop in worldwide demand. Certainly, we hope that there will be restarts of Japanese reactors in 2014, but of the 50 that can operate right now, the restarts, there have been 14 that have applied for restarts. There is no guarantee any of them will be permitted in 2014. I look at uranium as being flat to maybe a slight rise in 2014, but going forward, 2015-2016 is when I would see the rebound in uranium prices.
Okay, good way to wrap this one up. Mickey, of course, we'll reconnect in a couple of weeks from now. Any ideas? What do you want to put on the menu for that show?
Well, we pretty much finished up with the specialty metals, the so-called doping agents, which are really important in semiconductor space and diodes and things such as that, high-tech electronic applications. But the granddaddy of all this is silicon, and it's not really a metal, but it's the most important part of the high-tech electronics industry. So we will visit silicon and figure out where it comes from and how it's used and what we think the future is.
Okay, great stuff. Thanks a lot, Mickey. We'll talk to you in a couple of weeks.
Okay, thanks a lot, Rob.
That's Mickey Fulp, the Mercenary Geologist. You can find him on the web at mercenarygeologist.com. And you can always hear Mickey's latest opinion exclusively on mercenarygeologist.fm and kitco.com. I'm Robert Graham at Mercenary Musings Radio. Thanks for listening.